Good morning, golfers. Welcome to Finding Fairways here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne is on the phone with this week's co-host, the great Dan Pohl, legendary PGA Tour winner and Varden Cup trophy winner. Dan, how many PGAs did you play? And I know I'm even asking you a question you probably don't remember.
Well, most of the questions you asked me from back then, I don't remember. But, the PGA was one of the ones that it was the last major of the year when we were playing it. So it was always played in August, very hot conditions. I mean, I played at Southern Hills in the middle of August with temperatures over 100 and humidity high. So you kind of adjusted to those areas of the country. We went down to Birmingham, played the PGA down there in August. Just different conditions that these guys are dealing with this, in a late May type of atmosphere. Now you look at the opposite, the pluses and minuses. Yes, it's not quite as hot, but you got high winds. And, you take a golf course like that where, you've got to be on top of your game from start to finish, and you get the winds howling around there and moving back and forth and kind of turning on you. Some of those mid-range par fours all of a sudden are pretty difficult. And, the expectations of yesterday probably were correct, pretty benign morning, and you get some guys go out like Rory and Salatoris and play 5 and 4 under. And then the afternoon fought for everything they could get, never scrapped them. So, nothing really opening round of a major championship. The PGA of America normally doesn't try to trick up the golf course. They just put it out there in front of you, and you got to hit good shots.
Well, Dan, I'm looking at your Wikipedia page, and by far and away, your best major was the PGA. You played in it 9 times, and you did not miss a cut. You finished third in 1981. You finished eighth in 83 and 88. So, PGA, you were a great PGA player.
Well, the third was the important one, because at that time that actually got me into the Masters. So if you finished in the top 8 players in the PGA tournament in August, it got you into Augusta. So that one was huge for me. I probably would have got out of a couple of different positions, but it just kind of secured that I was going to play in my first Masters in 82, which we all kind of know what happened from there. But, I think it's two things. The PGA of America does not try to trick up their golf courses, does not try to bring in different, features. U.S. Open, long rough, hard firm greens. Again, the PGA of America kind of just sets up the golf course in their championship mentality. And they probably, again, you could argue with, different officials, but in my estimation, they probably set the golf course up as, lenient probably isn't the right word, but probably as straightforward as any major championship does. And I think that kind of lended itself to, good quality shots, good iron play, and you didn't have to worry about it being tricked up too much. And, by that time, I tell you the truth, in August, I was playing pretty damn good. So it's most of the time. And so it wasn't unusual for me to be playing good going into a PGA championship.
That is pretty much the accustomed thoughts about the PGA, is that it is the fairest of the four majors. Is that because the PGA of America is looking out for the pros, or what do you think the philosophy is there?
Well, it's hard to say, Jerry. I would have to think that because having the club pros in there, having it be a championship that's multifaceted as far as a tour player and for some of the listeners, they may not understand the difference between a PGA Tour player and just a PGA of America player.
Right.
And it's strictly whether you travel and play for a living or whether you run a golf shop and you give lessons and all that. So I think they've just got a different mentality of how this championship is supposed to fit all players. And it probably, although in most cases, it might be your weakest field overall outside of, again, when you say weak field, it's probably on the edges. When you get to 144, 156, it's those last 30 or 40 players where, a U.S. Open or the Masters is an invitation and it's got all the best, in the field. So, I've never sat down with a PGA of America official and really discussed why they do it. I think it's just a philosophy of fairness. A philosophy of getting the golf course in a position where it handles itself nicely, it shows nicely, but it doesn't mean that you got to beat the heck out of somebody to do it, and they very rarely take it to the edge like a USGA tournament would. You know, you don't see the greens. I mean, Southern Hills, listen, I played there quite a few times, not only in the tournament, but also in outings that we used to have, and if they wanted to trick that thing up and put some speed and firmness to those greens, even more so than what they are now, they could take it right to the edge of unplayable. The PGA of America decides not to do that.
Well, you played the 82 Open there at Southern Hills. That Ray Floyd won then, wire to wire. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the interesting things about Southern Hills is that most of the guys that have won majors there, Dan, have won wire to wire. And that's very unusual. Why do you think that might be?
Because I don't think it changes from day to day like a lot of places. You get it's pretty much again, there's courses for horses, whatever you want to call it. But I think when you get a good feel for that golf course, and again, most of those were played in either June at the Open or August as the PGA. The guy goes out, gets a good feeling, he's playing well during the week. The golf course is not something that changes so dramatically from day to day that you see something totally different. I mean, we've seen, places like Augusta that can change the speed of the greens with their sub-air system. You see, different conditions change dramatically from morning to afternoon at a British Open or an Open. So I think, when you get it, most of the time, these golf courses will not vary dramatically from day to day. And so once you get a good feel for it, you kind of hangs on for the entire week.
Well, one of the interesting things that I heard this morning, and we're taping this on Friday morning after the first round, is they're expecting heavy, heavy wind in the afternoon. And so they didn't cut the greens. So they're obviously a little worried about balls moving on the greens, which will halt play.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to be careful. I mean, the question will be is if the winds don't come up, what does the golf course do? I mean, you're going on the safe side. That's what, like I said, I think the PGA of America does a great job of analyzing all aspects of the playability and then say, okay, this would be crazy. What happens if? My guess is the USGA would, gun them down, let them play, and then just basically make an excuse afterwards. That's just kind of the philosophy. So it's like, okay, go ahead, crybabies, and go play, and we'll see how you do. So it is a little different philosophy, but it's gonna be tough. I mean, that's what you did. You play Southern Hills. You're not there to I'm actually surprised 65 was out there yesterday. Obviously, the way Rory was hitting it and the way he started, it was a pretty solid round. But they'll start easing their way back. I'm sure that I think you said Justin Thomas may have it a couple under for the day and is up there near the leaderboard. This is a guy that can play in any conditions, is not afraid of the difficult conditions, and that's what it's going to, that's what it's going to take is somebody that's got this, a game that fits it. You look at a guy like Ray Floyd when he won there, it's such a great short game. He's got such inventiveness and such creativity around greens he's not afraid of missing some of those greens. And so, they did change a lot of the edging and it's rolling off a little bit into tighter areas, but, these guys will learn how to play it. You did mention earlier though, and I don't know if you want to get into it in a separate segment, but, a lot of crying about the traps and the inconsistencies of the sand and the depth and all that. Well, cry again, boys. I mean, those are hazards. You can call them traps, you can call them bunkers, but they're built there for, for half a shot penalty, basically. So just don't hit it in them.
That's what I was thinking after I heard everybody bitching about it. Yeah, don't hit it in the trap. As we look at the first page of the leaderboard, Dan, and, you've always stressed, even though you were one of the longest players from the tee box in your day, that you were a great iron player. And this leaderboard, day one, is full of some of the best ball strikers in the world. Rory is a great iron player. Will Zalatoris is crazy good. Justin Thomas, Matt Kuchar, Abraham Anser, and Matthew Fitzpatrick and Schauffele. All of these guys are fantastic iron players.
Do it in different ways, but you're correct. Some have the ability to take less off of shots. I think, when when you talk about Rory, it all is set up with his driver. If he can continue to keep the ball where he can play it from, whether it's angles into the pins or whether it's, you know, out of the fairways, he's shown that he can hit that little, you know, kind of cutoff shot that's going in there with a little more spin, which is what you're going to need. But, you know, you look at why does Zalatoris, what's his game fit for these major championships? Because he doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. And like you said, he is a good iron player. Morikawa, even though he shot a couple over, he's probably the premier player out there right now. So you're not going to be able to play that golf course, especially with the distance of the par threes. They got some really tough par threes there that you're going to have to, you know, get through. But you're right. The leaderboard is a mixture, but a lot of great iron players on that front page.
Now, I love FanDuel betting just little bits of dollars on golf. I had Matsuyama. I had him at plus 350 to make it into the top 10. You know, he was two over. But, yeah, his iron play is insanely good. With the width of this new fairways, I mean, when you played Southern Hills back in the day, it was pretty tree-lined like Colonial. Now they've got, you know, they did your favorite thing, Dan. They ripped out 2,000 trees and have changed the golf course. And guys were just remarking how wide of fairways you can get, other than the fact that they have these creeks meandering through there. It really looks like a great golf course.
Well, it is. It's a great piece of property, and like anything, it's you're going to cry about some things, bitch about others. You're going to get good breaks. You're going to get bad. That's going to be the barometer this week, is, you know, who's not making the bigger numbers. You see guys go along and make a few birdies, and then boom, a six or a seven will pop in there, and that's just the nature of any major championship. You know, what's interesting to me is just the amount of players that are over par there, you know, the one overs and two overs. And usually, you know, we've talked about this in the past, Jerry, about getting the break of the tee times. And normally it's what? If you're playing late, early, it's usually a better thing because you get your round in and you don't have to wait around too much. The next morning you're right back into it.
Right.
But it would appear right now that might be the bad side of the draw, only in that you got some pretty difficult situations or conditions yesterday afternoon,
right,
and then you also wake up in the morning with it, you know, going at you. So, you know, I mean, luck of the draw, whatever you want to call it, but sometimes you'll see a larger portion of the field be in that certain shifts, and it'll be interesting to see when Rory and those guys from that yesterday's morning shift get out there, what the conditions will be, because I think you'll see that, you know, I don't know out there whether it'll blow all day long or whether it'll lighten up a little bit and towards later in the evening, all of a sudden it calms down and, you know, the morning late shift gets the better of the deal. So it's always fun to watch that, watch how people, work, you know, not only whole locations into the mix. I'll be very interested if it was going to blow that much, whether the PGA kind of softened up their pin positions today. Yesterday they had some pretty tight ones, but I would guess that if they're looking at not mowing the greens, then they're probably looking at not putting some hole locations where they could become issues.
When we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll discuss Tiger Woods and dealing with all of his problems, Dan dealing with a few injuries, recovering from them as well. So we'll get some insight into how it's playing, how to play professional golf when you're not your best. When we return on Up North Sports Radio's Finding Fairway, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It is time to check in with our good friends at carlsgolfland.com. Tim Coyle's on the phone with me. And Tim, here we are, one of our favorite times of the year, the PGA. And you've got so many things on flash sales and new arrivals at carlsgolfland.com. It's hard to categorize them all.
It really is. We're doing our best to kind of break it down for everybody online with all the new gear that's shown up. And, yeah, huge flash sale we have going on right now for the PGA. You know, free shipping over $50 as well. So most everything is getting out the door with very minimal shipping costs as well.
We always have the U.S. Open tied to Father's Day, but now's the time to start shopping for Father's Day.
Yeah, it's right around the corner. We've actually seen a couple vendor promos just start as well. Bushnell, which we're kind of looping into our major flash sale, has just started their Father's Day promo. So there's some awesome discounts on Bushnell tech from the Bushnell Wingman, which has been super popular.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about before, range finders, GPS units, watches. They have some great stuff and, up to $50 in savings right now.
Yeah, and you still got a lot of stuff on clearance and apparel, and Dad always needs to look better on the golf course.
Yeah, we got some great stuff as well there. We have polos starting at $20, so, I mean, you really can't go wrong. And we have free returns online as well, so if you're looking to rework Dad's wardrobe, free returns, if you don't know his size, you can get it back, and we'll get him into something that fits, and he'll be looking better for sure.
We know what's always fits is a gift card from carlsgolfland.com, so he can either shop online or, like we talked about last week, get him a fitting.
Yeah, fitting would not hurt. That'd be great. And we have e-gift cards available as well now online. If you forget about it or you're a late shopper like I am, you'll have one emailed over to you in just a few hours. So you'll be saved there.
As usual, Carl's Golfland saves the day. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Jerry.
Finding Fairways on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne on the phone with Dan Pohl from the Polecat. And Dan, when you and I talk on and off the air, you're just recovering from a knee surgery and hip surgery and trying to get back into the golf game. And we all know the documented injuries of Tiger Woods. A lot of people thought he looked pretty good warming up these past couple of days, but his body really betrayed him yesterday, especially in the afternoon.
Well, you know, the intensity level between practicing and getting out there and really bearing down, I know that Tiger does that in everything he does, so it's not like it's that much more intense than what he would normally deal with. But when you have issues, and I tell you, I've had enough of them with nerve-related activity and stuff like that, the more stress you're under, the more those nerves, fire and cause some angst, I guess, in your game. But, is anyone surprised anymore on Tiger, going in and playing? Are they questioning where he's at? He's the only guy that can figure out whether this is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. And I think as long as he's getting the okay that he can't hurt anything anymore, that's the hardest thing about being injured in this game, is that you're always afraid, especially if it's a back or a key head with his leg. It's something where you got to push off of and create speed and create stamina and all that. If you ever hear the words from, either a physical therapist or your doctor, is better, that, hey, it is what it is, you can't hurt it anymore, then you go and you do it. You play that out, and you push yourself, and you deal with the pain or the inconvenience of it during when you have to play. I mean, I did it for a long time. Tiger Woods is not the only guy that's ever played this game injured. there's a lot of people that have. It's just that it's so, documented that, what he went through. And listen, I'm the first one to, give him a round of applause for doing what he did, because I don't understand how his body is able to get back into playing as soon as it has. But, the other thing is we've talked about all the time is his team of people that he has. I mean, I've always said this, if Joe Schmo down the road had, a stress fracture or something, and you had 15 people being able to work on you when you're done and when you're starting and all that, you might not take you as long to get back into, the whatever job you have to do. But I take my hat off to him every time I see him wince and deal with the internal pain, because it's got to be there. There's a lot of people that deal with pain every day, and but they're insurance men, or they're not trying to walk a golf course like Southern Hills and perform at a level that Tiger's expected himself to perform at. So, admiration, all those words fit. But also, at some point, you almost say, "Okay, why? What do you need to do? What are you proving to yourself right now?" I think it's just his way of saying, "You know what? I'm not going to let this thing beat me. And if I give in right now, then I might start giving in all the time." And he's not that type of person. And I'm the same way. I said, you know, I've worked with therapists that say, you know, you don't need to do that. And I say, yes, I do. If they give me 15 reps to do, I'll do 20.
Right.
If they do, you know, because, and they'll go, why are you doing that? Because you said to do X amount and I want to do more. And so you just force yourself to think that way. And that's what competitors, and that's what, you know, it's not just Tiger Woods or myself or anybody. I've met with people that have a lot worse things going on than he does, and myself, that deal with that type of pain every day. And so you just take your hat off to him.
Well, he's a competitor just like you are. I mean, there's no reason for you to go back on the golf course other than the fact that, A, you're a golfer. You've always been a golfer, and you're still competitive. And Woods, you know this, Dan, as an athlete, a multi-sport athlete. You're a great, great baseball player, great basketball player. The hardest thing in the world is to stop being competitive, and especially physical competition. And that's all. I mean, Tiger Woods cannot spend all the money that he has laying around, but you cannot give up the competitive ghost, can you?
No, it's what drives you, and it's what's always driven a guy like Tiger. I guess the main thing is that, you know, you have to understand, you know, what is the definition of a competitor. You'd have to go in and you'd have to find a bunch of different adjectives and fill out that, you know, that for an individual like Tiger or myself. I mean, listen, I obviously didn't have the career he had. Do I need to go out and play, you know, a round of golf? No. Do I enjoy it? Sometimes not. But most of the time it's to prove a point, not to anybody but yourself.
Right.
And I always said, you know, who are you trying to prove it to? You know, is he trying to show, you know, again, Charlie and his kids and anybody else that he's going to come back from this, so it becomes something that drives other people and gets them to understand that, you know, you can go through really bad hardship and still, you know, be successful, or at least try. You always got to try. But then you look at it and you say, dang, when does the pain just not, you know, when do you not want to have that happen, and why do you want to push yourself through? And that only he can answer that. Only I can answer the fact that I'm a very competitive person that has to lay things down. I always look at the hardest thing would be like college athletes that went through 4 years at a high level of competition, and then they don't go anywhere with their next move.
Right.
You know, aren't able to go on and do something. You know, if you did the rings in college and you were great at the, you know, the pommel horse or whatever it might be, or you ran track and then you can't do anything after that, that would be at an age that I would, you know, be very difficult for me to shut it down. But when I look at everything that I've done and all the things and all the pain and frustration and all the things that go with it, you know, you really got to sit down and say, okay, you know, who am I proving this to? And if it's not to yourself, then you're probably not doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen athletes, great athletes throughout their lives, go farther than they should have, you know, most notably Muhammad Ali, his last couple of fights, or Willie Mays, or Johnny Unitas, and, you know, watching Tiger at the end of the Masters, you know, missing short putt after short putt. He had some atrocious chipping yesterday, and, you know, he probably will not make the cut today, and I'm sure he's going to play at St. Andrews. He's always said he will, but if he can't compete at St. Andrews, he's going to have to take a long, hard look at where he's going to go next.
Yeah, that'll be a tough one, because, you know, he's got to see some some results from this hard work, and it, you know, it's something that's more. I think what he's worried about is the stamina, which we all would be in that case. And you get one day in, and then you got the possibility of three more. That's a tough one to sometimes take on. And you know that you've got a long 3 days to go. And, you know, when, at what point, only he can determine, am I making progress? And only he can determine, am I okay with going out there and hitting shots and still being able to see a little progress? And if he is, then he's got, then he can continue on. But that's just another choice that he's going to have to make.
Yeah, I don't see Tiger Woods being a ceremonial golfer, but well, that's a bigger exploration for another day. When we return here on Finding Fairways, we will discuss what it's going to be like to play in very serious wind. I'm really interested to hear Dan's take on what wind conditions get almost unplayable. All that and more on Finding Fairways and Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Finding Fairways on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne on the phone with Dan Pohl from the Pohl Cat. And Dan, they're talking about winds of 20 to 25 miles an hour with gusts possibly up to 40 today. You can already tell looking at Friday's morning scoreboard that there's not a lot of low numbers being shot. Going back through your playing career, are there a couple of rounds that really stand out to you that were borderline unplayable?
Well, we've had a couple of cancellations over the years in Las Vegas. I remember playing there, and the wind was so bad it was blowing balls off the greens during the invitation, Las Vegas Invitational. And so, yes, I played in some absolute, you know, crazy winds. Now, you know, a lot of it is dependent upon the golf course itself, how they decide to set it up. And you'd already told me that they were, you know, hadn't cut the greens, and they're, you know, that tells you right there that the expectations are pretty, you know, bad that there's going to be some wind. But I played in the old LeJet Classic in Midland, Texas. You got out of the hotel room, your hair was blown all over, and by the time you finished, your eyeballs were sore. And you that's when the sunglass deal was more important for the wind than it was for the sun. Kapalua, places like that. You know, I think, you know, when you talk about the wind, you just have to be very, very, and I don't say you play afraid, but you play smart. You play a different kind of course management, because you know that around any corner, more so than a normal major championship, you got more opportunities to make big numbers. I think the tee balls are going to be more important than anything, because it's going to set them up to not be coming in at, you know, the 12th green with a left-to-right wind out of the rough or something. You know, that's just looking at hazard line right in the face. So, you know, this penetration of the golf ball, the ability to really move this ball through the wind. You look at a guy like, what's the young guy that won Las Vegas? Or not Las Vegas, won the Los Angeles. He was up there for...
Yeah.
He won the... It hits a penetrating ball flight. These guys that don't spin it up in the air, they really do it. Morikawa does it very well. Justin Thomas does it well. You know, that's what you're going to see today, is the guys that can kind of keep that ball from going, you know, catching that wind and going sideways. I always had a difficult time. You know, you would think because I was a cutter, left to right winds would help just ride the wind. But I always thought that putting more spin on that left-to-right shot made it very difficult. I'd rather cut that ball up into the wind and let it kind of kill it on these faster, firmer right. greens. So if you've got multiple shots, which most of them do, you know, they say, well, I'm going to draw it into it. Man, a lot of them, it's all dependent on the hole location. You know, if I can ride a 7-iron with the wind to a back right corner, I'm not going to try to draw it in to hold it. I'm going to let it ride it. If you got a back left pin and it's, you know, pin or the wind's blowing right to left, a lot of people will want to draw it in. I felt more comfortable cutting it back into it. So, you know, you just, everybody's going to have their way of playing this. I think the odd thing is, though, is it never really blew like this. So any of the players who have played there and under these conditions is going to be limited. So they may be able, you know, maybe able to get through the day, but you got to believe that somewhere around par is going to be a pretty good score today.
Yeah, you're talking about Joaquin Niemann, who won at L.A. this
year.
And he's just having a good day today.
He is one of those ones.
Yeah, he's 2-under today right now. He's at 4-under in second place. So, obviously, the wind is not affecting him terribly much. And, yeah, you know, I've always tried to explain to people there's some really cool things about playing in the wind. At least for myself, and I've got to believe it's the same thing for a professional. You know, there's so many other things to take into consideration than just getting up and whacking the ball. You know, about cutting it into the wind or flighting it down, or, you know, having to play a 5-iron into a green that you're going to knock down as opposed to hitting a full-fledged 8 or whatever. And whenever you pull those shots off, that gives me the most pleasure in the game, is to be able to take all those extra calculations into effect and pull the shot off.
Well, I'd have to ask you how many times that's actually happened for you. I could talk to a bunch of guys that have played with you, and I'm guessing it's on one hand that you've actually pulled that off.
Oh, you mother!
No, here's the thing, Jerry. Yes, you're an accomplished player. You've played difficult courses. I mean, if you played Oakland Hills like you have, and you understand what a golf course like that is, that brings the challenge. And when you can meet that challenge with a smart play, that's rewarding. Now, here's my take on a course like Southern Hills on a day like today. It's when you have a little bit more knowledge of how the ball is going to react into those greens. So if you take 9 and 18 and you've got it into the wind up the hills, okay, these guys are all playing from back. They're trying to get in the fairway, but they're hitting long shots into this. How do you hit a knockdown into that wind when it's so far uphill that it's coming back at you? So you got to be very aware of what type of shot fits, the green sight, the way it's going to react on the front part of the green. You saw a lot of those guys yesterday coming up short into the 18th green and hitting into that slope and coming back down. If that was downwind and you're all of a sudden, or crosswind, all of a sudden maybe you can ride it back into those corners. But I think today is one of those ones where if you played under a lot of conditions at there, so a guy like Scotty Scheffler, who's played some tournaments there in college and probably has a little bit more knowledge of the golf course overall, maybe he understands how a ball is going to react into certain sections of those greens.
Right.
Then you can pull it up. Yeah. You can hit a great shot with the right decision and all of the things that you think through and hit the shot, and it reacts differently on that, the back part of the green versus the front. And when you got those tricky, cutoffs, those false fronts and false sides and stuff, you don't have to be but 2 or 3 yards off, and you go from having a, 15, 20-foot birdie putt to having a pitch out of a tight lie that, you can't get within 15 feet. So you can turn a 3 into a 5 fairly quick. But,
yeah,
again, it just goes back to, can you pull the shot off for what's your, or do you just go to the strength of your game? I always thought that if I hit the ball solidly, that's all I needed to do in the wind. Now, that's your iron game, and that's your driver game. Putting is totally different. You get it over your back left corner or over your left shoulder or something, and you're a right-hander, and you're putting downhill left to right with a downhill. You start playing very defensive. So that's going to be the hard part. Birdies are going to be at a minute, at a premium. If you can go out and get 3 or 4 birdies and minimize your major mistakes, that's when a guy goes out and shoots, just a couple under, which would be a solid score.
You've always told me that your iron play was the hallmark of your game, and I've seen it in action. And that's the same thing, I guess, like Tom Watson is acknowledged to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, bad weather player of all time, because his ball was never affected by wind or rain. And I don't know how you do that. Can you tell me?
Well, neither was his 12 to 15 foot putting it back then. I mean, listen, when you're not afraid of missing shots, and Tom was never, he never had a great short game. He just made a lot of putts when they were needed. So he wasn't afraid to miss it in a bunker, hit it 15 feet and drain it. It was a 4,
right.
He could have hit it 40 feet and 2 putt, match that. So, if you go and look at a guy like Tom Watson, he was challenged by the conditions, but he also, almost made, I still think maybe the best round ever played was at Muirfield. I think it was in, I forget what year it was, but he shot 69 at Muirfield when the conditions, I think the average score was 78 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So when you're bettering the field by 8, 9, 10 shots, and you're the only one that's breaking 70, you're doing something correct. So some people aren't afraid of those conditions. They actually, get up for them. Other ones want to sit in the, hotel room and cry all morning before they got to go out there. Anticipate those guys being gone for the weekend.
when we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll talk about crybabies at the PGA. So another condition that was brought up quite a bit by the players, and we're going to get Dan's unbiased opinion on that when we return on Friday Faceoff on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. Here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. Jerry Coyne talking with Dan Pohl from the Polecat in Mount Pleasant about this year's PGA, an event that Dan made the cut in every single time he played. And Dan, the one constant that I heard yesterday in postgame was the play inside the bunkers. And the highlights, there was a lot of lowlights, including Tiger Woods. And even Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth had a lot of bizarre bunker shots, and everybody talking about them being uneven and not enough. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I want to just lay right here and cry. I feel so bad for these guys that they're probably playing for $8 zillion, and they might have to hit a bunker shot that doesn't have a chance to go in. I think, you know, the coarseness of the sand is what sounds like is a large part of it. You know, most of the time there's a granule that fits certain areas of the country. And, I mean, if you go right back to the idea that, you know, what's a bunker supposed to do? Is it supposed to frame a hole? Is it supposed to be there so that you can get in it and you can, it's like it's on a tee and you, you know, you have no challenge. You have to make different things. I mean, listen, you know, this isn't any sand that's changed from, you know, anywhere else in the world. I mean, there's a variety of sand that you're going to have to play every day. You know, back in the day, until they found out really about how the grind of a wedge was affecting the way the bounce works, you had to just manipulate it. I mean, the old guys, I mean, they took a pitching wedge and opened it way up. They did all types of things to make up for, you know, the style of sand or the style of shot they needed to hit, or they just had to make a nice 10 or 12 footer. You didn't hear a lot of crying about bunkers back in my day because, you know, I guess we were better players and we didn't hit them in them. But hey, a lot of guys right now are going, what? What did he just say? No, you know, I think the bunker sand there is an issue. You're going to have situational stuff when you've got those big caped bunkers like that. You got a little bit of washout or you got sand coming down. You know, you can't blame the caddies for raking it bad for the first 5 days or 3 days of practice. You could do that, I guess. But the challenge to me is, you know, finding that way to, you know, maybe, you know, if you short side yourself in a bunker and the pin's only three paces from the right edge and you're down below, what are you going to blame the bunkers? Or are you going to blame that stupid second shot where you put it in there? So I think there's a thought process that you say, okay, yeah, it's different than what we've been playing. But isn't different better? Isn't different a challenge? I mean, if these guys always say they want to be challenged.
Right.
Make it fair, but make it challenging. And they should be able to make those adjustments. Now, again, if you have to make if the best you can do is 15 feet out of the bunker, is that any different than short-siding yourself? I saw a couple of pitches from behind the ninth green and behind the side, and they were saying, man, the closest he can get this is 15 feet. Well, okay, he was in the grass. So all of a sudden, are you going to say that the grass is bad because it's inconsistent? No, you hit a crappy shot. And so now you got to try to make a big, you know, a great shot or a putt that makes up for your inability to hit a good second. So, you know, I enjoy listening to him, and I think that probably the players would prefer just to not have to answer that question. But I think it's, you know, I think it's a moot point that they got to be, you know, blaming the bunkers for their inability to hit good bunker shots.
Well, here I want to give you a little math here, Dan. This is the 40th anniversary of when you played at Southern Hills. Okay, you played there in 1982, and you finished. The entire purse that year was $450,000. That is fifth place for the finishing spot here. $450,000 total purse. Ray Floyd got $65,000 for winning. You probably made what, like 10 or 11 when you finished eighth. And the winner of this year's event will get $2.1 million.
Yeah, that's enough to make you want to cry right there, isn't it? I mean, if there's people that be crying, it should be the guys that played there back in the day. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. You know, there's different aspects to this. And, you know, I mean, listen, they deserve to be playing for a lot of money. If you're doing that, don't expect everything to just be laid out there for them. They've done everything in the book to make it easier for these guys to play. They tab down spike marks. They could drop a ball 8 inches from their heel in a drop. You know, force any of these guys to drop it over their shoulder and see if they can get it on a good lie like we used to have to do. Put it so that there's a big old spike mark right in the front of a four-footer that you can't tap down and it misses by 6 inches because it hit the spike mark. And then let me know if you want to cry some more. They want the players to play better. They want to speed it up. I get all the reasons. Do not cry about bunker sand being different from hole to hole and position to position and be playing for that kind of money. It's ridiculous.
Well, I got two things for you before we end this program, since we're talking about money a little bit. And you know the whole situation with the LIV and Phil Mickelson and Greg Norman. If this had been presented to you during maybe at the end of your career, where you could go and leave the PGA Tour and play in this other tour for 5 to 7 times the money, what would you do?
Well, overall, Jerry, I'm probably one of the most loyal people that you'll ever meet, as far as, you know, like with golf companies. You know, if I was playing your equipment, you got 100% of me, and you got my, you know, I would never balk on anything. I'd go do things for the company, all that. If you proved to me that you weren't, you know, giving me back exactly what I was giving to you, then, you know, it might change the way I thought. The PGA Tour allowed a small-town guy, Dan Pohl from Mount Pleasant, Michigan, to have a pretty damn good career, to be able to play against, at the time, some of the greatest golfers in the world, travel around, do all that. Is money the key thing? No. Would it help? Yeah. I mean, there is no doubt. But kind of like when I think about Phil and think about guys that might jump, with all of the things that the tour has given them, you can be critical. You can be, you know, mad because you didn't get this and that and the other. But bottom line is that organization came up and did a lot of things, especially for these players. You know, again, a lot of them don't know the history of guys that won 12, 15 times on the tour and made, you know, $800,000 total. You know, they consider a good career anymore. In fact, I heard the other day, oh, God, he's got like 25 top 10s. What? You know, I had 75, and I didn't play but about 10 or 12 years. So I look at a lot of the things, and I say, you know, for myself, I don't think I could have done it. I don't think I was raised that way, where money would drive me somewhere, unless somebody did, you know, something that, you know, proved that they weren't, didn't have my back. And I don't think the tour has really showed any negativism when it came to that. I'd have to say on the personal side that I wouldn't have went just for money.
Fair enough, Dan. We're coming to the end here real quick. Who's your favorite to win the PGA this year, 2020?
Well, that's a good one. You know, I like Justin Thomas. I think Scheffler is going to play better today because that par he made on 18 out of the water yesterday might have been the catalyst to go and shoot a couple of pretty low rounds. But, you know, if I had to pick right now, I mean, without seeing anybody play, I thought Justin Thomas, this golf course, fitting pretty well. So we'll see what happens. But I would have normally picked you because, as you said a lot of time ago, you were challenged. You really enjoyed that challenge. If I could have picked you as the eventual winner, it would have been that, Jerry.
Okay, let's all head to the bar. So that's going to do it for us here on Finding Fairways. Enjoy the PGA. And as we like to say here, find a fairway of your own, stick a peg in the ground, and pound it down the middle. We'll be back with you next week here on Up North Sports Radio. It's time to check in with our good friends at Boyne Golf. Ken Griffin's on the phone. And, Ken, we are in the midst of some incredible golf weather.
Spectacular, which means that the courses that came through winter are even better shape. And I'm happy to announce that we have all 10 Boyne Golf courses open now.
Yeah, I always get my BoyneGolf.com blasts. But the one that I got today is super exciting. Talk about the tee time offer.
Yeah, well, the tee time offer, it's in honor of the PGA Championship. So I hope everybody, after their morning rounds, gets to watch great golf with it this weekend. But we have two offers, Jerry. We have a tee time offer that if you're fortunate enough to live close by and already have access to lodging, you can play the Monument, the Alpine, and the Moor Course for $70. Those tee times are good Sunday through Thursday after 11 a.m., anytime that we have available now through July 31st, when you go to book, you just use PGA Champ 22, but you must book by Tuesday night to get those rates to play during that time frame.
Fantastic rate for play, and then you got to play it your way package.
Yeah, we brought it back. We haven't had it for a couple years, but it's very popular. The play it your way package, you get two nights and four rounds. So you can play two a day, or you can play an arrival round and a double and a getaway. But anyway, the two-night, four-round Play It Your Way golf package, check in Sunday through Wednesday. You save 10% when you use the code PGAChamp, and you have to book that by Wednesday night, June 1, and those are for any weeks clear through the end of the season.
Yeah, and we all know that the weekends are really booking up, so this kind of deal on midweek golf up at beautiful Boyne is a deal and a half.
It's a great deal. So you can book that. Go to Boyne.com for all your details on courses package and or to book your tee times.
Well, Ken, I'm going to follow your advice. I'm going to get my round in early on Saturday morning out at the Moor and then settle in for some great PGA action.
Sounds like a great plan to me, Jerry. Everybody should get out and golf.
We'll see you on the fairways and also at BoyneGolf.com.